Hi, my name is Ophélie, and you're listening to the Mama Activist Podcast, a podcast where we explore topics ranging from social justice, culture, politics, and news through deep conversation with myself, activists, humanitarians, and everyday people trying to make a difference. It's a space where we are willing to learn, grow, and be challenged collectively while highlighting activists doing amazing things in the world. From hearing new perspectives to learning new things, we are pushing for a better world, fighting for our liberation and reclaiming our power. So tune in and be a part of the movement. Hi, this is your host Ophélie, and I'm here today to talk about institutional racism and anti-blackness racism with Colleen. And how this is impacting black refugees and black asylum seekers on the island of Lesbos. So Colleen is working for an organization called Wave of Hope, which is a self-organized school in Moria Camp. So Moria Camp is one of the biggest refugee camp in Europe, is the biggest refugee camp of Europe, which is not... which, like, the name of it is not Moria Camp anymore. Moria Camp was the original camp that burned down in September 2020, and the new camp that was built after that, which has a new name but is formally being referred to as being referred to as Moria Camp. So Colleen, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, hi Ophélie. So I'm Colleen. I'm from France and I've been working in Lesbos since 1 year. Before, I was doing an internship in Phoenix, Humanitarian Legal Aid, which is a legal NGO, and I was working with them during 6 months as a legal assistant. With a lawyer to prepare the asylum seekers for their interview, to help them with their appeal and with their asylum claim. I was working with Wave of Hope as a coordinator. Now it's been like 8 months I'm working with them. So it's like a group of self-organized schools in different camps, Wave of Hope. There is one in Moria where I am working, and then in other camp in Greece. Mm-hmm. Like all the people of this NGO are refugees, except 3 person. Mm-hmm. And they, it's like a self-organized school, so they are doing their own teaching for all communities in the camp. So as a coordinator, I support like administrative work, some fundraising, help with social media content, and support also with material for the school.
Nice.
And trying to implement some new projects. And now the last project we were implementing was a correspondence letters from the kids to some school in Europe that are writing some letters to the kids.
Nice.
In the camp. And like, it makes me think about like one of the letter, it was a kid in Belgium and she wrote, "I lived in a very privileged country and I'm thankful for it every day."
The kid wrote
that. Yes,
the
kid wrote that.
Nice. So. Well, thank you, Colleen, for telling us a bit about Wave of Hope. And I think it's one of the only self-organized, well, at least it was one of the original first self-organized school in the camp. And the camp is called
Mavrouni.
It's called Mavrouni Temporary Reception and Identification Center. Yeah, so, and one thing I wanted to mention as well, because you mentioned Phoenix, so I've just started doing group session about topics on race with Phoenix. So this morning was my second one, and nice. The conversation was about institutional racism. And so, yeah, I just want to mention that I'm Ophélie Lawson. I'm an activist and I work with black asylum seekers and black refugees, and I am a black European myself, And Colleen, you are a white European. You were born in France. I was born in France too. So thank you for introducing yourself.
Thank you.
So yeah, the reason I wanted to have this conversation with you is because obviously, as a black European who's been working and supporting people on Lesbos for over 2 years now, well, most people on the island they're all white, like white volunteers, white humanitarian workers. The amount of black Europeans who came on the island to help, it's actually, I don't think we're more than 5.
Yeah.
Even less. I think at some point last year, I was the only black European on this island. And yeah, I think you can also, like, I don't think you've met other black Europeans other than me.
No, I think, yes, José, no?
Yeah, José. And José and I did a podcast about how, what it meant for us to be black European on this island. The reality is that most people who came here to help are white. And this is, of course, due to, like, being privileged enough to come here without having to make money, because, you know, most volunteers here, they're not making money, so they have to be able to financially support themselves for all their time being here. So the first thing I wanted to ask you as a white European is, what is your understanding of institutional racism?
Institutional racism, like, what I understand is that it's a privilege that whites have, an advantage, they have in their daily life in the society because of racism. Institutional racism means that the society is really racist, and white has always privilege, and it never changed, like, since a long time. It never changed, just change the way it is, and it's more hidden in a way, but
actually, like, I guess you could say this is an aspect of what institutional racism, what it does is that, you know, it's playing, like, white people are benefiting from institutional racism because of their whiteness. So I have two definitions of what institutional racism is that I would like to share with you, because in my work, those definitions are, they've been very they've been central to my work and to trying to challenge people, white people's perception on race, especially on this island, which I think is very important because we're working with a marginalized community, a marginalized population, and we have the problematic of the refugee crisis, and within this problematic we also have the problematic of race and racism. So the first definition that I have is institutional racism, also known as systemic racism, is a form of racism that is embedded as normal practice within society or an organization. It can lead to issues such as discrimination in criminal justice, employment, housing, healthcare, political power, and education, among other issues. And the reason I like this definition is because it talks about how it's embedded in our society as being normal. And something you mentioned is that, you know, white people are, they're privileged, and black people are being discriminated against, and this is deep into our institution. And so the second definition I have is institutional racism is discrimination or unequal treatment on the basis of membership of a particular ethnic group, typically one that is a minority or marginalized, arising from systems, structures, or expectations that have become established within an institution or an organization. And yeah, so those are, like, two of the definition of institutional racism that I go by. And you know, I think, like, from what I've done so far on this island and the conversation I had with white people, with white volunteers and humanitarian workers, is that they don't have an idea of like what institutional racism is and how they are benefiting from that as white people, you know.
Yeah, so, I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's impacting what black people also within Moria come, with Mavre ou Lini come. And it's something that people are not willing to talk about because of the problematic of refugees that we have here, the refugee crisis that is present on this island. So people are not willing to open up the conversation about black refugees and black asylum seekers. And you've worked with black refugees and black asylum seekers, right?
Yes, yes. Some of the teachers, they are black asylum seekers. And also in Phoenix, I was working with black asylum seekers.
Right. And what is your understanding and how, like, in terms of like how racism is affecting black asylum seekers and black refugees, what is your understanding of that?
I understand that, first of all, there is a lot of discrimination about refugees here, and also there is this discrimination in terms of refugees, that black asylum seekers are more discriminated. And also what I saw is that even volunteers, local people and policemen, they are discriminated a lot. They are making discrimination a lot against black asylum seekers. For example, a lot of volunteers, they speak to them like as kids, or and a lot of my friends, they told me like sometimes people, they just ask us, oh, how are you, like, you know, like a kid, and after they are speaking to their friends who is white or volunteers, and they speak like, hey, how are you, bro, like, yeah, you know, like, they are making such a difference, way. Yes. And they are like, come on, you can just do the same with me, like, check me and just, yeah.
Like, treat me like a human.
Yes, exactly.
Treat me like a human.
And what I see here is that refugees in general are treating like kids, that they cannot do anything, they are not capable of doing their own thing, and that's why international volunteers have to come. And that is, and it's more with black asylum seekers because they are more discriminated. And
so yeah. I think, because you say like white volunteers, they have to come, and you know, I think I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is in the mind of white people on this island. You know, they have that understanding that they have to come to save like refugees and black asylum seekers, and how like for most of them, the decision to volunteer, I found that is led by self-interest with little or no experience in humanitarian work or any prior understanding of the complexity and gravity of the situation for refugees and asylum seekers. And most of them are also unaware of their white privileges, meaning that they are gonna treat other people, they are gonna treat the refugee population like kids, because in their mind, they think that, you know, they are here as like superior people, as helpers who are here to help those people who are unable to help themselves. And it's very sad because, you know, they don't need anybody saving them. They need support because of the condition and in which they are living and in which they are trapped. But they don't need anybody to save them. You know, we can give them, like, and this is why I really like your organization, Wave of Hope, because it's a self-organized group, you know. So you have like three volunteers who are not volunteers and workers who are not refugees, who are part of the organization, but they don't have such important role in terms of this for the school. You know, all of the teachers, the director of the school, they were all part of the refugee population, you know, like the former director of the school who just left yesterday, I think.
Yes.
He's been living in the camp that whole time.
Yes.
You know, and so this is why I wanted to have that conversation with you, because you are one of the only organization on this island who give so much power to the refugees and asylum seekers they work with, because you guys also pay them.
Yes.
Right? Which is not the case with other organizations who are taking volunteers from the refugee population but not giving them anything, any benefit. And then the people managing those volunteers are all getting paid and are all white, you know? So going back to like institutional racism and discrimination, I was wondering, because have you ever heard or witnessed any anti-blackness racism on the island or where, when you were like with the people you work?
With the people I work, not directly, but in the camp I heard a lot, and also like a lot of my friends explain me a lot about, for example, here with the policemen, there is a lot of anti-blackness racism. Now it's COVID time, and a lot of policemen are finding them like almost every day, and all my friends who are white, they don't get any fine, never.
Yeah.
And it's, and there is a lot of story like this that especially in policemen and also in the local people, there is a lot of discrimination in the camp and also in Mytilini, and also volunteers who are treating the refugees, black refugees, differently, and like
it's true. Like, I've also been wrongly treated by people, by the authority, by also the locals and volunteers, because of my color. So for instance, last year when I was working here, I was fined about 5 times by the police for not wearing a mask when I was wearing a mask and they weren't wearing a mask. And most of the time it was like racial profiling, and the police officer were openly racist with me. And I kind of wanted to I wonder if you understand where that comes from, you know, as a white European who obviously has always been like, you've always benefiting from being white, you know, how do you understand how those dynamics are due to institutional racism? Because to understand institutional racism, we have to go way back.
Yeah.
You know, we have to go way back at the foundation of the Western world and how everything started. So yeah, I really want to know if, because also your role in this island is very important, if you understand those dynamics.
Yeah, I understand that it comes from our history, because the Western Union always colonized the South, that's what we call North and South, that's what we learn in school also, which is kind of ridiculous to put like North and South, and like also in school we learn like also the way we see the world, like the map of the world is always a point of view and everything, and
what do you mean a point of view?
Like in the Western part of you, yes. Like everything that we learn in school is from the Western world, and and also this history with like the slavery and the way that white came to other country and just
colonized
and take all the resources and raped and were controlling the other countries,
world.
Yes, and the world, yes.
Yeah, you can say the world.
Yeah. And it's still the same, like the Europe is still in other countries, and it's another way of colonizing, but there is still kind of colonization.
Yeah, colonization is very most colonizers gave independence to their colonies. After colonization, you still had neo-colonization,
yes.
Because you know what they did to those countries, especially after slavery, and then when they colonized those countries, you know, they made those countries dependent of them, And even though they gave independence to those countries, to their colonies, there is still that dynamic of the colonized being dependent to the colonizers. You know, because also colonization was not just about invading a land and taking something that doesn't belong to you. It was also deeply embedded in people's mind, you know, in terms of ideology that we have about like indigenous people, black people, and also stereotypes that we have. It comes from, especially in the Western world, sorry, all the stereotypes that we have in the Western world about blackness is all coming from colonization and slavery as well. But I think for many people on this island, they don't realize how institutional racism go way back. You know, racism is not just being verbally rude to someone or physically rude to someone. No, it's deep into the institution is the reason why, you know, black people have better role, have in better work, better opportunities, make more money, have like a bigger heritage than black people. It's all due to institutional racism. And in the refugee crisis, institutional racism is not only impacting black people in terms of police brutality, it's also impacting black people in terms of their right to asylum, you know? Because I think you've been working with black people, so I think there is some dynamic that also sometimes you might not be able to link them to institutional racism. You can still see those discrimination and injustice, you know?
Yes.
In yes. terms of asylum claim.
Yes, for sure. And also, there is a list of countries that are considered like safe and low rate acceptation. And this list of countries, there is mostly African countries. And so most asylum seekers who come from these countries, they are rejected. And also their asylum claim is more longer.
So you mean Afghanistan is on that list?
No, Afghanistan is not on that list. No. There is few countries who are considered not safe. And like a big list of countries who are considered safe, but people still come here because obviously it's not safe, but yeah. it's a list. I don't know which criteria they put, but, and most of the countries are African countries, and it affects a lot here asylum seekers who come from these countries. And also there were a lot of discrimination because when these asylum seekers come to the island, they were directly put in prison for no reason, just because they came from safe countries. And they stayed in prison long time for like no reason. And for example, a lot of Cameroonese people that I met, they went to prison for no reason, just because they came from Cameroon.
Yeah, this is also some nice, good you mentioned that because, yeah, it is also a reality for black asylum seekers. Because, for instance, it's not just Cameroon people, it's also Togolese people.
Yes.
So my mom is half Togolese people. So when I came here and I met people from Togo, you know, I was directly connected to them because, you know, some of my roots are like in Togo, and all of the Togolese people here, and there's like 20 people in that community, so they are a minority. Back in the old Moria camp, because the old Moria camp had a prison, so all of them went to prison.
Yes.
Like the new arrivals didn't, because the new camp doesn't have a prison, but the old camp had a prison, and they were all sent to prison for 3 months. And in those 3 months, if they decided they wanted to stay in Britain still, like, do their asylum claims, then they would be left inside the camp. And out of all of those people, most of them had rejections. Only if two of them that I know had their asylum granted
yeah.
and the refugee status. So yeah, this is also an issue, and it's also due to institutional racism and the way that, the refugee crisis is very colonized, and we are not willing to recognize that those people have the right to ask for asylum. I say those people, my people, like black people coming from Africa, they also have the right to ask for asylum. They're also fleeing from war, violence, conflict, persecution. They're victims of colonization, victims of environmental disaster, because this is something that Europe is not willing to talk about, but Europe kind of created a society of political repression and paranoia and clandestine murders in some countries in Africa. And, you know, in such an environment, it's the continual exploitation of a nation's natural resources is easy. So not only did they persecute black people, but they also made it that even in the case of an African person, and again I'm generalizing, but an African person living upon the land of their ancestors, through the process of colonization, they would become a stateless person. And Europe, in terms of institutional racism, is in denial. They don't want to realize what they did to Europe, to Africa, sorry, and how the white man comfort was built on the black man's suffering. Nobody's really, like, those conversations are only starting to open now, and it's very hard. Like, if you look at France don't want to recognize that it's a racist country.
Yeah.
You know, they keep on talking about being, like, about fraternity, like, you know, like being human, blah, blah, blah. They are so racist.
They're really racist.
Very, very racist. And they don't want to recognize their role in what happened to Africa.
Yes.
You know, and they're still taking from Africa all those natural resources. And so institutions in Europe and, like, law on migration, it was all done by white people. It is a white person who describe and define what a refugee can be.
Yes.
You know, so exactly. They're not taking into consideration what they did to Africa. And yes, for some countries, like Afghanistan, it's easier for people coming from there to, and it's not, it's easier, but it's not easy. It's easier, but it's not easy. It's hard for all refugees, but because the conflict are more like, they've been recently recognized, like, by the media and by Europe, it's easier for them to come and ask for asylum. But for African people from Africa, it's not as easy. It's very, very hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I agree that, yeah, there is persecution in a lot of countries. And if you flee your country and you've been through a lot, it's for a reason. Like, no one flee the country for no reason. And there is always a good reason to be a refugee. And I agree that this definition is, like, really general, and also they can do everything with this definition. And
exactly.
The institutions here are really, really racist.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are taking interview of asylum seekers, they do whatever they want with this definition. So if they want, they can say, okay, yes, you're a refugee. But if they don't want, because they are racist or because they don't want people to come, they just can reject for completely not valuable reason.
Yeah, because they have, because they don't even realize their own internalized racism and how our institutions are racist. So everything that was, like, developed inside those institutions is going to be racist. You know, so it might be hard for them to recognize a black person as being a refugee, a forced migrant, and not a migrant who came to steal our opportunities, like, you know, they wanted us to think, especially after colonization. Like,
yeah.
Every black person who came to the Western world was seen as, like, a parasite, someone who came here to steal something, when, you know, it's the Western world who is stealing from
Africa.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, and this thing about this racial discrimination, racist imagery based on someone's color, is very hurtful and harmful to those people, because if you are labeled as an economic migrant, you have no right to ask for asylum. And most black people are being labeled as migrants, like economic migrants. And then again, I have an issue with this term, because even for a white person who's going to be an economic migrant, they're not going to be labeled like this.
No,
they're
going to
be labeled
as
expats.
Yes, exactly. And there is a lot of expat or economic white migrants in Africa. Migrant. Yeah. Yes, for
in
sure
Africa,
they are.
Yes, of yes. course.
Yes, and of course, and they are going there a lot. Yes,
yeah,
everywhere.
When it's a black person, it's different, you know, it's a different dynamic because the Western world just don't want like black people. It doesn't like black people, even though it was built by black people on the suffering of the black men and the black women. It doesn't want to recognize, like, to recognize that.
Yeah.
Something else I wanted to ask you is, have you heard of black asylum? Yeah, obviously you've heard about black asylum seekers having to wait longer to get their asylum claim, and how you've seen how black asylum seekers are often wrongly seen as economic migrants. But how does your whiteness impact your work? Do you have a, like, are you aware and conscious of that? That your work is going to be positively impacted, and your life trajectory is also going to be positively impacted by your whiteness. And
yes,
this definition that I have of white privilege come from this book I told you about.
Yes, yes.
That you should read.
Yes.
Why I'm no longer talking to white people about race.
Yes. Yes, I, like, here I realized more my white privilege, that as a white European girl coming from France, I would have, like, more opportunity, and I would have been treating always better than black people. And also I saw how it affects my work. And also I thought a lot, like, because I didn't want to be like a white savior or to, like, I was thinking a lot, and I would never come, for example, here if I didn't study about, like, asylum seekers, and it was like the continuity of my studies. But here I realized, like, more all these white people coming and don't even know what is a refugee, and their effect is really, really bad on people because it's traumatizing more. Because they came and they don't even, like, they are treating them like kids, and all this system is don't treating them like as human. And then there is these people coming who are supposed to help you, and then they are affecting more in a bad way,
yeah,
because
creating more trauma.
Yes,
yeah, because
more traumatized.
They're dehumanizing them.
Yes,
they're
more.
Giving
yeah.
Giving them humanity, you know. They're not willing to give them humanity just because they're refugees and they're in need of support and help, and they're not in need of saving. So I agree.
And also that in my studies this year I was also, like, studying how NGOs are also like NGOs in Africa, for example, are a part of neo-colonization, and I studied how, like, it should be, like, then, like, more empowerment, like this self-organized school, and that's why I worked with this school, because I didn't want it to work with any other NGOs. And I heard about a lot about all these NGOs and how they treat people, and they are part of the system. There is the system of Europe, who is racist and who is anti-migration, and there is also all these NGOs here who are part of the problem. Yeah, it affects a lot of my work that I was thinking, okay, what is the good way, you know, to do? And the good way is to just let people do, like, what they do, like, and
what
to
do you mean?
Let people, for example, let them do.
By people,
say,
who do you mean?
People of the camp, refugees,
to
just. They can do everything, like,
yeah.
They can do everything. They just need support for the things the system don't let them to do. So it's mean for lawyers, they need Greek lawyers, for also medical assistance, but then the rest they can do, like they don't need any European to come and help them. Yes,
exactly. They need us to re-engage with our privilege and give them the support that they don't have in order to achieve things for themselves, which is why I like Wave of Hope, because you know you're giving resources and tools to people who are teachers back home to teach again in the camp and organize communities to educate kids, you know. And I think this is what people should do more. It's just come and realize that nobody needs saving, that they just need us to re-engage with our privilege. And do you realize that you have to constantly challenge your whiteness?
Yes, I realize that, yes, and more here, and speaking also to you, like, I realize that, yes, I have to always challenge this and always think that I have privilege and how we should...
And how you're benefiting from those racist systems.
Yes, exactly, yeah. And how I should, in my daily life, don't... I have to challenge myself and don't let this institutional racism, like, in my life, you know? Like, I have to be more aware of all this and, like, also speak to people when it's racist, what they do, or...
Calls and yes, out. Yeah.
Because we need to.
Yeah. Thank you for being aware of that, because I think it's really important for white volunteers and white humanitarian worker on this island to realize that and not to tend to act too much like white saviors, because unfortunately and very sadly, you know, this has become the norm. Volunteer trips have become very popular. If one thing, because they are appealing to a broad audience, people looking to better their CVs, people seeking life-changing experience, those looking for an opportunity to better themselves through helping others, and it's all to do with like saving people coming from like a privileged background to help save people, and then in the savior's eyes, anybody who's like in a position of helping and saving people needs to be white. This is why many volunteers and many humanitarian working have racial profiling, because they just don't believe that as a white, as a black person on this island, I can also be part of the people who wants to help, not save, help.
Mm.
So yes, it's important for you to challenge your whiteness. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I saw many people like this, and especially one girl, like, she came here and she was like white girl from I don't remember the country, and she was coming in the camp, like, you know, dressed like a queen, like, she was so weird. And this woman, when she was speaking, it was like, she wanted to save the world, and she saved the family in a country in Africa, and you know, this girl we met, Netherlands.
She was terrible. Yeah, in our social media platform, in our bio, she wrote currently saving
the world.
And she had a picture of a black family somewhere in Africa where she went, and she wrote in the caption, I quote, I saved those people.
Yes. Yeah, this girl. And and here there's a lot of people like this, and also there is some NGOs. They wrote on a Facebook like post that because they bring some toilets in the camp, and then they wrote that these toilets were really dirty because all asylum seekers mostly came from countryside and they don't know how to use toilets. And
it was that too,
yes, and it's crazy, like. And there is a lot of volunteers, like, and in this NGOs there were a lot of volunteers also coming, and it was just white girl and
that,
yes.
So those white people were saying that
people cannot use toilets.
Because they grew up in the countryside.
Yes.
In their country.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you see how this is harmful, right?
Yes.
How this is internalized racism, and in their mind, you know, they brought toilet to those people, so they're helping them. Who told them those people didn't know? And I keep on saying those people, I'm sorry. Who told them people living in the camp didn't know how to use toilet?
Yeah. And also, yeah, they bring just white people, like white girl coming and, you know, do the drainage. I don't know, it's a drain of the camp when it was raining.
Yeah.
But these girls, like, they all, like, they don't know even, they didn't do that in their life before. And there is many people in the camp who can't do that, and they know it.
And they did it.
And they did it, the girls. And it was really bad. And then after the second rain, nothing changed because they don't know.
The communities in the camp, they did it themselves.
Yes,
right?
And it was, well, and then it was okay.
Yeah.
But when they bring some girls to do it, white girls who don't even know how to do that,
but who,
like,
are supposed to save?
Yes.
Well, I'm very happy that you are challenging your whiteness and your white privilege, and that your whiteness is not shaping your perspective on things, but rather you are committed to challenge those behaviors and make a positive impact on the people you work from. And the last thing I want to ask you before we finish our conversation today is, how much do you believe education to be important in terms of fighting racism and perpetrating institutional racism? Like, how much do you think education has a role in that?
I think education is, like, really, really important for that. And since we are kids, we should learn what is institutional racism and how, like, we have white privilege and how we should always challenge this, and we should learn that at school and since we are kids, because when you're a kid, then you grow up and then you become an adult who knows and don't do the same mistake, and, like, it's not mistake, it's stupidity. And, like, we should learn since we are kids. And also, because we don't learn that, we just learn
history.
Yes, we learn the opposite. And we even in there is still in the way we are learning in history, the way we are learning history, and there is still it's really institutional racism, the
it's
way
really
we are learning history.
Yeah.
And we are learning, for example, we never learned the history, like, in some, like, we just learned colonization, but it's still, we don't learn the history in Africa, from the past, like, the kings, the queens, every, like, what happened in the past. We just learn, like, colonization and how, like, the poverty, and, you know, we have also always this image of that we learn in school, which is a bad image. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, Africa being seen as a poor continent.
Yeah, poor country, and that's, you know.
Continent.
Yeah.
And
poor continent, sorry.
Don't worry. Corrupted continent, all of those. And, yeah, this is exactly what we learn from education. I, as a black woman, black European woman, I grew up in a school, I grew up in Europe, and my education was always that my people, you know, were bad, were poor, were criminals, were corrupted, and, you know, white people were king, queens, colonizer who saved poor people, you know, who discovered places, who, you know, all those good things, which obviously is a lie because it's history in the eye of a white person. And I think that, you know, in order to realize the deep impact, negative impact of institutional racism on the refugee population, black refugees and black asylum seekers, it's also important that white people educate themselves on history and what they are being taught from a young age, and they challenge education. And, you know, in terms of institutional racism, education do play a big role, because through education you perpetrate those ideas of white being superior and black being inferior, and you internalize that in the mind of those who go to school in the Western world, that if you're white, you're okay. If you're black, you're going to struggle. you know, your life is going to be hard. You come from generation of people who were corrupted, poor, blah, 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 who were enslaved because they couldn't, like, you know, like white people have, they had explanation on why they were enslaving people to do with genetics and all those things. So, yeah, so I hope you're also educating yourself on that.
Yes.
Doing a lot of unlearning and relearning. And other than that, I want to say thank you to you for taking the time to come here and talk about your experience as a white European on the island who has come across and seen racism from a white perspective, but you are an ally, and you're willing to do the work. Although you know it's never perfect. You always have to challenge your behavior. Yeah, it's nice that you're willing to be called out and to challenge those behaviors, and also you're trying to do to have a good impact rather than a bad one. And I think I just want to tell you that it's also important that you have conversation with other white people. You know, it's not just about centering the voices of those who've experienced racism and listening to their story, even though it's very important. It's also important to challenge your role in racism, how you're benefiting from it, and challenge other white people's perspective and view on race.
Yes.
Especially on this island, you know, white people have a responsibility to do
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that was it for today. Check out Colleen's organization. It's called Wave of Hope, and they're on social media. You can find them on Facebook and on Instagram. And you can donate. You can support the teachers. The teachers come from everywhere. You have from Afghanistan, Africa. It's very diverse, and the job they do is very important because they provide education within the camp, and they're also living within the camp. You can also check my page, the Unheard Refugee Voices, where we are amplifying the voices of Black asylum seekers and Black refugees, and trying to give them to amplify their voices, bear awareness to their situation, and give them direct support by re-engaging with our privilege. And yeah, that was it for today. Bye.
Thank you, Philly. Bye.
Thank you, Colleen.